I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, listeners of Lower Your Expectations. Welcome to a very special episode. I feel like we're getting used to saying a very special episode because we have a very special guest, Mr. Greg James.
Yeah, thanks.
How are you doing?
I'm really good. Really, I'm happy to be on the podcast. Also, gotta say, great name for a podcast.
Thank you.
It's very appropriate, to be fair.
I hope you don't have any expectations for this because...
No, like a name that sort of...
Sets the tone.
It does.
From the get-go.
This one literally lowers your expectations. Yeah. And so anything is a bonus. I think that's good.
I should also add in, we are recording in a complete different location for Matt and I, so...
This is the coolest one, isn't it?
This is the very studio that we did our first proper pilot for the new breakfast show in today.
Wow.
You can probably, if you listen carefully, you can probably still hear the laughter echoing around.
You are the new host.
I am the new host from Monday.
From
half an hour
half
after
an
this
hour,
is
yeah.
released.
So this is going to be broadcast, this is going to be put up simultaneously to my new breakfast show. So I'm going to be I'm up against myself already. The stiffest competition I've ever faced. But it's happening on Monday and I've sort of been in the office. It's now 20 past four in the afternoon. We got in at five this morning and we've been working on it all day.
So you got in at 5 a.m. this morning. Is that when you did you do the trial run through at 5 a.m?
No, we did it at 6:30. So okay. we ran the morning as we'd run it and we were live, well, pretend live on at 6:30. We ran the whole show. It was good, but it was missing a vital ingredient, which is the listeners. Didn't quite feel as special as it went on Monday, but I'm excited.
Bit more adrenaline Monday.
I hope so.
but here's the thing, because you've obviously got a lot of experience. Do you think it's going to be that much different? You know, like if it was someone new coming into the job, it's obviously, oh my God, what's going on? But you've obviously got a ton of experience.
I think that's the nice thing about me getting this show now. I've been on Radio 1 for 10 years, which is unbelievable, really. I never thought that would happen. And I feel like I've served my apprenticeship and I feel like I have gained loads of skills and made loads of mistakes and got lots of knowledge and sort of gone through starting new shows that actually... I feel like I'm perfectly placed to take on a big show like this because you can't just sort of walk in the breakfast show and just sort of do it.
Oh, you can't wing it for sure.
I think you've got to have some sort of, I sort of get Radio 1, I understand it, I've sort of studied it for such a long time and I feel that I'm ready to do it. But yeah, the show will be different. There'll be lots of new stuff in it, but I'll still be there, which is not necessarily that different. But I'll be doing, picking up where we left off on the afternoon show, but really pushing it on and seeing where we can take it to.
How do you come up with new segments? Like, do you trial it or anything like that, or is it just like a written like a note to be like, right, I'm going to do this on live without actually testing it?
A variety of ways. I've got a really amazing team of people who work with me and we just come up with stuff, so we'll watch everything. Like, you will just naturally just watch the world, watch everything that happens online and listen to everything and just react to stuff. And I think that's what the show is going to be about. It's we'll get in early and like just get a feel of what's going on and then work out what our twist on that stuff is. I always carry my little red card.
Oh, I love that. With me,
so I can send people off. But it's my red notebook of stuff.
Of ideas,
so whenever there's
thoughts.
A thing that you see or you read or you're like, oh, how about we look at that later and make that into a feature or whatever?
How would that work? Because, for example, like in the YouTube world, if we think of a new trend or we think something's going to be great, we kind of just trial it on YouTube and then we get a sense from the audience or how it's received. And that's kind of like, there's your trial. This is going to work. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
With the radio, do you have a live trial? This is going to be good, we're just going to go for it live?
Bit of both. I think if you're on for a long time and you know what you're doing, if you know what you're doing with your platform or you know what you're doing with a TV show, you know what you're doing with a radio show, whatever, you have a confidence you have an instinct of like, I think this is the sort of thing that might work and I think this is the sort of thing that they might go for. And as long as we've prepared it and thought it through, we would try a few bits out off air and we would maybe run a few bits to see the best way of doing it. But a lot of the bits that we'll do spontaneously will just be off the cuff. And I think that's what people like watching and people like listening to. They like seeing a thing develop. What's so nice about YouTube, actually, and so nice about radio and the similarity in that way of it can just evolve and change over time. Like, your first videos will be very different to your latest video or whatever. So that's...
I mean, you didn't have to ruin my first video.
But that journey from the little nugget of the idea to the finished product can be quite rewarding in itself.
Have you ever brought something to the table that not as backfired that you've then done and you're like, oh my God, why did I do that? Because I've definitely done that with YouTube.
Yeah. Do you want to go into specifics, Marcus?
No, well, you know, people know about that.
There are certainly things that I've done that you wouldn't do again. So we did a feature called Greg's Sex Line. It's a good title, and it's sort of a good one-off. It's essentially really quite innocent, is that you get a load of blokes and a load of women on the phone, and you go through the lines, and you're like, I'm going to guess man. They go, hello. And they go, woman. Hello. And you just go through like that. And it had a dodgy theme tune, which had too many innuendos in it. It was a bit mucky, mm-hmm. I thought. So we didn't do that again in a hurry. So yeah, there are things that are in the radio graveyard.
And was this the dream show you wanted, like 10 years ago, when you walked through the BBC doors, are you like, one day I want to be doing Radio 1 breakfast show?
Can you give us a backstory into like, what was your first job? How did you progress up? What was the process?
Well, I started doing hospital radio when I was a kid. When I was at school, I was clearly a very cool child. I decided that I wanted to go and help out with these load of old blokes who were running the hospital radio station where I grew up. Yeah. And I just quite liked radio and I was always into it. And I was like, I like the jingles and I like what it sounds fun. And like, how is that a job? And I realized it was a job. And I thought maybe that would be a good job to do. So I went to hospital radio and tried out and did some shows there. And I was obviously not very good because I was 15, but I sort of was around all these people that were doing stuff. And then I went to university. I studied English and drama and then did student radio. And I did a load of student radio at my university in good old Norwich.
Yeah. My sister went there, actually.
Yeah. The place that Jim Chapman also went to.
Yes.
Famous alumni.
Yeah.
Synergy.
Yeah. I went there and did loads of student radio and I loved it. And I got involved in every bit of student life. We put on club nights and we would do comedy nights and we'd all this sort of stuff. And I loved it from there. And then Radio 1 spotted me through student radio, gave me a tryout show to do. And then that was it. They sort of kept in touch. That's very cool. I dropped the English side of my degree because I was too busy sort of doing
Radio
1
stuff.
So you
didn't finish your degree?
I finished it. I did a drama. I finished it. I did the third year of just drama because I was like, Dad, Radio 1 want me to go and do stuff. I haven't got time to, I can't read all this.
Did they respect that? Like, yeah, did they support that?
They got it. They knew that this was another one of my passions that I wanted to really pursue. So, mm-hmm. and it paid off. And I now make sure that they have a lovely retirement.
Do you have the audio from your first trial show here?
I have it at home.
Has that ever been put on air sort of thing, like reacted
right
to
now.
It?
Right now.
I don't think it's been put on air for a long time, but maybe it's worth digging out. I know it's on a CD. It was 2007.
Retro.
Classic. 2007 classic CD. For your younger listeners or viewers, there's a compact disc, which predates MP3. And the mini disc, which died a death. But yeah, so that was it. And then I got to Radio 1 when I was 21, and I've just been working here ever since. And to answer your question, yeah, I think it's the show that you one day hope you'll be considered for and considered good enough for. And I've spent a long time sort of working at it, and it feels like the right time to do it.
I read an interview of you. I had a little stalk of some stuff before this, and I thought your attitude towards it was really nice.
Okay.
In the sense how you made some comments about previous things, how it was, you know, a bit more rock and roll and stuff, but you want to kind of change that element to it. And I just thought that was really nice and kind of respectable.
Well, I think that I've always loved funny things. I've always loved comedy and comedians and funny stuff and things that have made me laugh. I've never once found a radio show where everyone was pissed that funny, and I've always really liked funny stuff. I was thinking long and hard about this show and how I don't want this show to be the story, if you know mm-hmm. what I mean. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily, it's deliberately not the Greg James show because I want it to be a bit more inclusive and a bit more about the world. I don't want this show to be the story.
Self-centered around you necessarily.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. This show, I don't want to be like pop culture. I want it to reflect it and welcome it all in and celebrate it and point it out when it's gone badly or like when someone's been an idiot. But I think when you're sort of in the circus, you can't take the piss out of the circus anymore. And it's sort of, always been my attitude. I always feel like I'm nicely outside everything. That you can just have a nice overview mm-hmm. and bring the best bits or worst bits of it to the listeners and make them laugh with it.
Are you ready for the early mornings again? Because a while ago you did the early show.
That's
didn't
true.
You?
Yes.
And what's the early show start from?
Well, the early show is like stupidly early, 4 a.m.
How long are you getting in beforehand, like prepping it, things like that? Is it an hour, 2 hours?
That show's different because it's that show's more about survival.
That's how like I stay awake.
That's a survival show where you just have to get there and be sort of coherent.
Because that's the time, you know, when like I remember when I was younger and you go on a family holiday and you've got the 2 or the 3 a.m. wake up and you're like, come on, guys. I guess it's back to that, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's different going on holiday and working.
Yeah.
It's different, isn't it?
That's the problem with this week. I thought, oh, Monday was fine because I went, oh, it's like I'm going to the airport. Yeah. I never got to the airport. I just ended up here. That show was tough. When I started, I did that show and it was 4 a.m. till 6:30. So I was getting in for about 3:15, 3:30. By the end of it, 5 to 4. And then this show, I think, there's worse jobs to be getting up for at 5 o'clock. Yeah. I think I managed to get up at 10 to 5, roll into the cab, get here for 5:30, we'll be all good.
My friend works for Good Morning Britain and he gets up at 2
no.
to start. Because he said apparently there's a debate in their office where, do you nap or do you go to bed at 6-7 o'clock?
Yeah.
I did my day in 2 halves when I had to get up at 2. You just are a zombie.
Yeah, you're just always catching up on sleep.
You lose your friends, you lose your relationship, your love life, it sort of crumbles.
Everything's at risk. I would like to get an opinion from you on the future of radio.
Sure.
I mean, that's a very hard question to answer. Everyone turned to you, but like...
Too tired for this.
Yeah, go on.
You know, how do you see it evolving? Because radio's been around for a very long time. Mm. With the digital age and the internet and stuff like that, I feel like it's been put more pressure than ever before. How do you see the future of it evolving? I mean, Radio 1 obviously does stuff across everything now, so it is kind of moving with that, but yeah. I mean, do you have an opinion on the future of it?
Completely. One of the reasons why I wanted to take over this show now is because I've got quite a clear vision for the things we should be doing and the people we should be targeting with it. A lot of people write about and talk about radio as a dying medium and all the rest of it, but actually the statistics don't really show that. They show that things are being shared out a bit more evenly. That's just how the world is. Like, there's a lot more things to, there's a lot more to listen to, a lot more to watch, a lot more to whatever. So you've just got to be smart with it, really. And my big aim is to address that fear of it's in terminal decline, of just by going, well, there's a lot of people who just simply don't know about it. They just don't necessarily know that radio can give you a really great part of your routine. And that's quite hard to get to those people, but that's where I'm gonna have to aim. It made a big impact on my life as a kid, and I love certain bits of radio, and I remember certain little tiny bits of it. I'm like, oh my god, do you remember when Chris Moyle did this or whatever? And I think it's all about capturing those moments again. And we should never, as a station, Radio 1 should never be too arrogant to think that, well, people will just listen. It's Radio 1, it's the BBC, darling. It's never like, it's not like that. That's not how the world works. You can't, if you look at Nike or something, they have to keep telling people how good their trainers are, and they're Nike, and like McDonald's still put adverts on everywhere because you have to remind people that stuff's there. So I think with Radio 1, the simple quick fix is just to be proactive and talking about it and be confident and be like, you know what, you might like this stuff on YouTube, you might like this stuff that you go to on Instagram every day, you might like the bits that you pick up on Snapchat every day, but the radio can also provide you with those sorts of bits of fun and that amazing music and those big guests and all of that kind of stuff. And I think the management of often overcomplicated stuff. And like, well, what do 15-year-olds like? What do they like? Do they like Drake?
Absolutely not. I'm living for your impressions right now.
Sorry, I just always do voices. I'm sorry. It's so annoying. But they always go like, well, what does a 15-year-old do? And that's quite a dangerous question because there's not just one type of 15-year-old and they don't just like one thing, and I don't like one thing, and you're not one thing, you're not one thing. We're all very different.
Also, the audience is hopefully larger than just 15-year-olds. Yeah,
exactly.
Can but imagine only 15-year-olds listen.
But I think you can pitch stuff that is universal to lots of different age groups, and I think if I can make people excited about listening to the radio and they'll get something different every day and they'll get something funny and a different spin on everything, then I think you can start to change habits. It doesn't happen overnight, but that's my aim, really, and that's how we're sort of approaching the new show, is that I'm really excited at the prospect of going on a Monday morning with a load of people who might have never heard of me or Radio 1, but they're just giving it a go. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, well, you've said all this stuff in the press. Well, let's see if you make me laugh, or is this going to be an interesting bit of radio? So that's how I see the future.
I'm just thinking of so many things you said, like even with the added pressure, like, are you putting pressure on yourself?
No, really, I don't feel any pressure. I feel very proud of all the shows I've done up to this point. And I feel very happy in my actual life that if it all stopped tomorrow, I would go and do something else. And I wouldn't die if I didn't do this job. Or if Radio 1 was suddenly switched off on Monday, I'd be sad, but I'd be alive.
You'd survive.
And I think that's it. It's just, I want it to be fun and I want to have fun with it and think carefully about it and plan it and all the rest of it. But I'm not heaping pressure on myself because I don't feel like I've got anything else to prove up to this point. Yeah. I want to prove a load more with the new show and make it a
success.
But
that's more excitement than pressure,
definitely.
Isn't it?
Definitely, yeah.
But I think that it's in the preparation, isn't it? If you were to be winging it, we've got a couple of ideas, but let's just see how it goes on Monday, you probably would be nervous, but you seem to have like a meticulous approach to your shows.
Yeah, well, I think we've had to, because we want to just make sure we're doing the best thing we can pull out of all of our brains. That's basically it. So we've really thought about it and been like grown-ups. It's quite a change for me. but I really like it. And also, it is supposed to be fun, and it's supposed to be a fun job. So we should all, we'll be nervous and be feeling some sort of pressure, but if I'm not having fun, then the listeners certainly won't be. So
I was about to say, with nervous, I mean, I'm sure you have been nervous for hosting guests. Mm-hmm. Has there been a time that you've been most ready to shit yourself?
Attenborough, David Attenborough.
Really?
Oh, wow, when he when
absolute
I first
absolute icon.
Incredible. When I first met him, he came into the studio and waiting out in that green room out there, and he was just sat there, looked exactly like David Attenborough. That's a weird thing, but he looked exactly.
Like, I just want to hug him.
He was just there and being very nice and calm, but I was a mess because I thought, this guy he means so much to so many people. Yeah. I just wanted to do it justice, the interview. And that was the main thing in my head.
And did you? Were you proud? When you left that room, were you like, I have nailed this?
Unmitigated disaster. It was great. And we got him to do, I don't know if you ever saw the video with Adele. We got him to re-voice Adele's new single. So it was like she was coming back into the wild.
It was when she
came back from her sort of first album and second album, and she came back with this enormous with Hello. She came back with, and it's that video where she's driving up the driveway, mm-hmm. and he was kind of like, and here's the spotted Adele back into the wild type thing. So
have you ever had a guest that sort of, you know, goes a bit wild?
You think of like Jimmy Kimmel or like Kanye over there.
Yeah, like, you know, when Kanye's on.
Threatened to just tip over.
I saw that and I was like, man, Jimmy is like about to lose control of this because Kanye's such a character. Yeah. Is that something that you have to sort of deal with?
When Ricky Gervais was on the first time, he was pretty live and loose.
Uncontrollable.
I mean, I was finding it funny. My producer at the time was finding it horrendous. Because it rested with her, like, you know, if it all goes wrong, then she's the one who gets in trouble. Weirdly, Mel B was the most troublesome guest.
Brilliant.
It was because she was late. You know, when she was on The X Factor and she was one of the judges, she brought in her contestants, whatever, and they turned up, but she was 20 minutes late. And so I was just chatting to these nobodies for ages. And like, how's singing? That kind of thing. And I was like, Mel near? This is live at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Anyway, she turned up and we muddled through this slightly awkward interview where I didn't really know who they were. And then Mel turned up and then for some reason just said the word friggin'. And I went,
the northern accent.
You probably can't. I was like, probably don't. Best not to say that word again. She said, you are friggin'. You can say friggin'. And then went, friggin', 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 friggin'. And then just kept saying it. And I was just there going,
yeah, how? Well, what can I do?
So I went,
I'm not joking.
I think the interview's over. Bye. Oh, so I had to sort of end it. So yeah, you do.
Is your producer over there?
The producer had died. But there's very, very rarely do you get someone who's like that. People get it. And that's when we're doing the new show, I think we're going to just make sure that the guests feel happy and comfortable.
Sure.
And like it's that they're in on the joke, I think. And that's, I don't want to, we're not selling the show on guests necessarily. We are going to have some big guests because they want to come onto Radio 1 and talk about stuff. But I think we should treat the guests as well as we treat the listeners. And like everyone's kind of equal in that way. We want to get them on and do a funny game. That's the dream.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
YouTube chat on YouTube.
What do you think about YouTube? We're going to get into it, but you've obviously got this influencer character you create, which is brilliant. But, you know, what is
YouTube?
How do you feel about it?
YouTube has completely changed the world, and I have nothing but complete admiration for it as a thing. And there are some incredible people who do amazing things on it. But much like TV or radio or any medium, there are shit people on it as well.
There's a lot of shit.
Yeah, of course. So as we mentioned earlier, I love taking the piss out of things. Yeah. Life is too short not to find things funny. And I find a lot of things on YouTube really funny. I look at some YouTubers who are really young and I despair. And I'm thankful that YouTube wasn't around when I was 15, because that would have been me. And you're just not, sometimes you're just not ready to say things.
Well, of course
publicly.
You're not. Even when you're 20 and yeah. etc. And I feel like big issue in the YouTube culture is these younger kids growing up, 15, 16, 17, they have access to this platform, and then all of a sudden, you know, if they blow up, they have access to money instantly and this massive responsibility where there's no one there who can really, because it's a new medium, there isn't anyone there who can really say, look,
yeah.
You maybe shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. And the only way they sort of learn is by usually fucking up.
That is a problem. And then sometimes the problem is that I've been very lucky that I have producers and I have some amazing people helping me through stuff. And everyone is better when you've got a few brains on it. Yeah. And you've got like, well, maybe don't say it like that, but reversion the game into this. And actually a lot of YouTube creators would benefit from someone just being like, actually, you've got something there, but you could just work that up into something a bit funnier.
We were saying this the other day, weren't we?
I say it all the time. A lot of the biggest channels and platforms in the world get, you know, crazy numbers. But if you were to look at the teams surrounding them, you know, one person, two people, and a lot of those people are usually yes people. There's no sort of control or structure. And we go back to the Logan Paul thing, but all of that happened because you're just in this immersive world of hype and crazy numbers, crazy money. And
yeah, totally.
No one's there to just drag you back down and be like, actually, you know what, that's not a good idea.
You need people to tell you you're being awful. You need some people just to say, that is actually terrible and you need to redo that, or don't say that because that is offensive and this is why it's offensive. No one's born with all the knowledge you need to go through life. You need people to tell you along the way. I've talked to a million people about starting my radio show, all the people that I've come across over the years I've been doing radio, all the old bosses I've had, all the old producers. I've been like, help me. How can I make it really good? What would you think? Blah, blah, blah. So you need to look out.
Only get better from learning. Right? Mm. It's much better to learn in a room of small people that you trust than millions of people telling you
who maybe don't have your best interests sometimes, like the people who don't know you. Sort of.
But creatively, the internet is an amazing place to create things. And I've really embraced certain aspects of it. I love doing stuff online. I've always loved doing little videos and bits and funny whatevers. I've always loved that kind of thing. I think it's just all about using it wisely, and a load of people do, and that's brilliant. My problem with everything, and it goes across the whole media world, is when you abuse your position just to flog shit to people who sort of worship you. And I think that's a real misuse of trust between you and your audience. I try very, very hard not to just force feed people stuff I'm trying to flog. The thing I'm trying to flog is that I do a radio show and it's funny and I want you to come and listen to it, I suppose. And I'm lucky in that respect that is my job. But there's got to be a balance of, hi guys, I've just done a lush haul and here's some bath bombs. It's a bit like, oh mate, is that... That's not in the least bit entertaining. It's just you opening soap.
Yeah.
It is strange how, like, kids now, people are becoming YouTubers so young, influencers so young. They were essentially raising a generation of salespeople.
That's what it is. It's flogging. It's flogging stuff. And it's greed-based and fame-hungry. And that's what I'm personally just opposed to. I love people being creative and coming up with fun stuff, like a prank or an interesting format that you might have done on your chat. That is great. Of course that's brilliant. You're like expanding your brain and your horizon and trying stuff out. But if you're doing it for the ends of, I just want to be rich and I want people to take
Of course, that's the worst outset to have on it. The only thing I can say in defense to that on their side is, I guess, that, you know, like when someone does this thing as a hobby and they're like, oh my God, I can get paid for this. It goes straight to their head and they're like,
yeah.
But another thing I was going to say is, a lot of the time a brand is so particular about their focus. It's very rare you get a brand that's quite on board to do fun stuff. So I guess to people who aren't in a position where they can earn advertising revenue off their videos, they're kind of keen to go, but
I get it. I understand why everyone does everything they do. It's just personally me watching it, I just go, wow, that's... It's so blatant. You're not even like trying to make a joke out of this. You're literally just
flogging.
You're just flogging stuff. Some of them should just be called floggers.
There you go, coined
it. I'm Instagram a YouTube at floggers.
Oh my god, I'm a YouTube flogger. That's me.
If you had a YouTube channel,
yeah, which I would have done. I mean, I probably should have done. Got so wrapped up in doing my radio show, but I definitely would have done it if I sort of did, but I started putting all my videos on Radio 1's YouTube.
When we had Jack Whitehorn, he said the exact same thing. If he, you know, was a few years younger when he grew up, he thinks he would have also started on YouTube and used that as his platform to sort of...
Well, it's an outlet, isn't it? And you just need a mobile phone to do it,
I guess, certainly.
In that respect.
And it is brilliant. I think probably I would have done a podcast. I would have done that as well. Because they are brilliant to learn about it and to do interviewing techniques and to create little worlds. That was always my favourite thing. I probably would have done a YouTube channel, but I definitely have tried to create or recreate that feeling of being in a club of radio listeners with a podcast, definitely.
On YouTube, I don't know, I'm sure you are aware, there's a trend at the moment where everyone is boxing everybody else. joked about it like a year ago, saying, where is YouTube going? Because it was diss tracks. People were making diss tracks about each other, but... It was clearly like the YouTubers doing it. We all knew it was like in on the joke, but then
we know the real reason they're doing it.
Cash.
Yes, of course. Yeah, of course.
I was going to say, so those are like trends in the YouTube world. Do you have trends in the radio world that like you don't like pet peeves sort of thing?
Very good question. I don't think I do. There are certain types of radio that I don't like. I don't like a presenter being sort of silenced and given 10 seconds to talk every 30 minutes. I think that's a waste of a human life, really, because there are some incredibly talented people all around the country who are sort of put into a tight format. I don't like radio shows where you feel left out. I think that's the other thing.
As a listener or as a presenter?
Yeah, as a listener. If you're feeling like you're not part of it or you're not invited or it's like too cool for you, I don't like that. And that's actually something that I do really love about YouTube, is that people feel like they are
in a community
and they're connected to the person they go and watch. And that's very similar actually to radio. Although it might seem like I take the piss out of everything, that connection you have with your audience is quite similar to the radio, in that they come back to you and they sort of trust what you say on things, and they come to you because that you make them happy or whatever. So that's really nice, and I like that about radio. I like the inclusivity of it. I don't like it when it's a group of people who think they're funny just trying to out funny each other, and it just gets a bit tiresome. And actually that's when they forget about the listeners.
I hate the tension in that as well, when you know it's like one-upmanship and like, oh
yeah,
guys.
It's uncomfortable to just watching people jostling for the line. Like, but I think radio at its best is when it's for everybody and for the... Excuse me, that was a small burp.
I actually just had one as well at the same time. I was just
burp like, twins! Oh my god! Oh my god, we're such burp twins. Hashtag burp twins. Oh my god, hashtag flogging. But I think it's really... it's awful when you hear a show which is just being broadcast. Like, listen to me, I'm the best. And actually, I prefer shows that allow you to be part of it. Oh yeah, actually... Just quickly, on that YouTube, on that influencer thing that I did, it was about Borsan cheese.
Yeah.
And the joke then became real.
They reached out to you.
So on my Instagram story, I just put a really just quick picture of me just eating a whole thing of it. I was like, this is how I'm going to die, because I love cheese. And I was like, I'm just going to eat all of this. The next day at work, or 2 days later, they sent through a cool box full of loads of cheese, and so I put it in my fridge and was like, oh my god, I'm so lucky to have all this cheese, I'm finally an influencer. And then I put that on, and then obviously loads of people were commenting going, I had no idea about this stuff, but I'm going to try it now. So then I saw a report on some advertising website saying, we reached out to Greg James, who then became,
became a real influencer.
I actually became the thing that I hate.
You're the brand ambassador.
I'm the brand ambassador now. I got paid fuck all.
Flog it now.
I get paid anything for it.
I have to say, you influence me. I'm not a man who knows much about cheese, and watching that,
do you like Borsan?
Well, I've never had it, so now I feel like I've been influenced.
God,
you're changing the world.
I'm changing the world, one cheese at a time. But that was it, and I still haven't been paid for it. But I've been paid in cheese. If only I'd have said something like Aston Martin or something. Yeah. Send me one of them. Yeah.
being a YouTuber, being someone in the social space, as it is a new world, it's always when you go on a talk show, usually, you know, one of the first things and one of the only things they always talk about is money. And it feels like that's all. And we've got to a point, you know, we're 15 years nearly into YouTube and it's still being the most questioned thing. And I feel, I want to ask you, because obviously working for the BBC, do you ever feel uncomfortable that that's known, you know, salaries are released, things like that, because I never know how to answer the question. It's really awkward when people ask you, because you're just like, well, what am I meant to say?
Yeah, I think it's an unfair question, because I think it comes from a place of maybe jealousy. For YouTubers, I mean, I get to the BBC bit in a minute, but I think it's an unfair question because I think it comes from the wrong place. I think it comes from a place of, oh, well, you don't deserve it. It comes from you don't deserve that. And I think also it comes from a generation of people that don't understand it. I think that's the other thing. It can come across as quite ignorant to ask people that sort of thing, because it's like, it's quite dismissive. I think you can be dismissive in other ways and not actually sort of go for the jugular, if you know what I mean. I think that's
well, it's just
mean.
Become the obvious. It's like you're going on a talk show.
You're rich, aren't you?
Literally.
How big's your house? How many bedrooms you got?
It's fair play. You have to work hard at whatever you want to do. And some people were really smart and decided to go big on YouTube, and it's paid off for a load of people, and that's great. The BBC thing is different, and I don't mind being asked about my salary, because it's been paid for by me and you and everyone who pays a license fee, and I really don't care. I'm not that precious about it. I feel like literally I do a unique job. There's no one else who's the presenter of the Radio and Breakfast show, so that should be paid accordingly, I do think, because it reaches a lot of people and it does a big job for the BBC.
I feel like with that, bringing it back to the YouTube thing, a lot of people from old family members, etc., if you haven't seen, they're like, oh, you earn money from that. Oh, I could do that. And maybe it's a similar thing. They're like, oh, all you do is just talk in a mic and play some songs. Oh, that's easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like you probably do get a bit of that as well in that industry.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the majority, I would say 99% of the people listening really couldn't care less, or just wouldn't bother to even find out how much I'm being paid. In the grand scheme of things, it's not a lot in terms of the BBC and my age and the job that I do in comparison to people at other radio stations. It's a lot, and I feel very lucky, and I'm proud that I get that money, and I will talk about it openly. What it does make me do is want to work really hard and justify it. I wouldn't want to see anyone wasting my money, and I don't feel like anyone who's listening to my show should feel like I'm wasting it or not giving the best I can give. So that's how I feel about it. It's a good question, and it's an un-British question. The whole situation around it is very un-British and quite taboo, but I'm very comfortable talking about it.
You are right. It's a culture thing, and we do struggle to chat about money openly, I think. So thanks for being open.
Yeah,
and
it's all right. Drinks on me.
But now comes the real big question.
Oh my God.
The real big question. It's Matt, I'll let you explain the segment.
The big question is a segment where I...
She's looking over. She's looking over like, oh my God, what are they going to ask?
Abby from Radio 1
wants to know how much you're earning after tax. No, it's not that. It is a segment where I go and have a look online and find some things I find interesting.
Okay.
Which is usually a bit off-piste.
Sure.
From that derives a question.
Okay,
and this week, the headline is 24 sheds up for the coveted prize to win £1,000 in the Shed of the Year Awards.
This is new to me
as
well.
If the price is right, I will be hosting. I'm available to host the Shed of the Year Awards.
But I would like to show you, and for people who are watching on this, I'll put some images on there. But I'll show you. So we've got Tudor House. It's a shed.
That.
It's lovely.
It's lovely. That looks a bit like, if you're familiar with London, that looks a bit like Swiss Cottage.
Yeah.
It does.
When you're driving past.
I was
going to
say a smaller
London.
Version of Liberty's.
Oh, Boat Pod. Can you see that?
Boat Pod?
That's Boat Pod.
Does that float?
Unclear.
Looks like it's like a sort of log cabin with a little, is there a little wood burner in there?
It's excessive for a shed.
I like that. It's really nice. It looks like a very big version of a birdhouse.
I think this might be my favourite one, bottle shed. They're all bottle caps.
They're really pushing the limits of sheds here, aren't they?
So that's bottle caps in the wall.
Yeah. Yes. But they look like pebbles, don't they?
It's very Brighton, that one. It's very Brighton sort of art studio space.
Well, I think the reason they've done this article is because it's impossible this year. No, they can't decide. My question to you guys is, if you were to enter in next year's Shed of the Year, what would your shed be?
Wow.
I don't know if I really want to release my private information out to the world.
Do you know what? I'm a big cricket fan, and I've always loved the idea of being a groundsman. I quite like mowing the grass. So I'd make sure that it was a proper, functional, good old-fashioned garden shed with potentially a little greenhouse element to the back.
Oh, for growing your own sort of plants. And
could grow some tomatoes.
Yeah, wonderful.
Got to have something to do in the cricket zone, haven't I? What I would do would be big enough and I would have enough land. This is my dream, by the way.
My land.
I would have enough land to have a sit-on lawnmower. So I think that's my sort of dream. Okay, if that ever happens to me, I'm like, I've made it. Yeah. That is it. That is
good luck in London. But
if you ever see me driving around Oxford Circus on a sit-on lawnmower, you can go, A, he's made it, but also he's lost his mind.
Oh, man.
Marcus, what are you thinking?
How to compete. I really like the pub element. Ooh. I feel like there's a nice element of being able to go, shall we go for a drink in my shed? Yeah. Sounds a little bit creepy. With a group of people, it wouldn't be sort of first date sort of thing. That's a bit weird. But
I thought you would have like a coffee, like in Shoreditch, maybe. No. You love coffee.
I do love coffee
more than a pub.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to do a coffee pub.
Coffee pub. I know you, mate. I just
no idea what that is. Can I just say, had it here first.
Look, I've not helped things. You've not helped. This is the most middle class answers we've ever done. It's unbelievable. I've talked about cricket. You've talked about a coffee pub. We need to wrap this up. This has become unbearable.
Well, mine is going to be a cinema den for sure. Like you've got the popcorn machine. You've got the slush puppy maker in there. Have it like a big projector. And it's just like, well, I mean, I want it to be classic Hollywood, but the slush puppy machine doesn't really
You've beaten all of us
there.
Big projectors to play your own videos on it. Exactly. But 4K, UHD, surround sound proper.
Well, ladies, gentlemen, boys and girls, that wraps up this week's episode of Lower Your Expectations. Thank you very much, Greg, for coming on.
Thank you so much. It was a real treat.
Good luck with the new show. For people who would like to listen, how can they listen?
Well, you can listen on Radio 1, on FM, which is 97 to 99 FM when you're in the car. DAB Digital Radio on the BBC app. There's the BBC Sounds app, which you can just listen wherever you are on your phone.
If you're listening right now, 6 a.m, this has just gone up. As soon as this finishes, go over Radio 1 and you'll be catching history being made.
Good point. You've made me feel nervous. But yes, history will be made on Monday. Don't miss it.
And make sure you guys continue to give us lovely 5-star reviews. Nothing else, please.
Yeah, 5 stars only, particularly for this. I feel like I've given 5 stars.
You've absolutely nailed it, so thank you very much.
My wife loves Borsan, so if you are listening, Borsan, I would also really appreciate that. Oh,
mate, I can hook you up. I'm Mr. Borsan.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, guys.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.